You are listening to episode 69 of the Tennis Files podcast with special guest, Johnny Frazier.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Tennis Files Podcast, bringing you advice from the top minds in tennis to help you improve your game. And now, here's your host, Mehrban Iranshad.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Tennis Files Podcast, and it's really a pleasure to bring you another episode this week. And today we're going to be talking about tennis fitness, specifically about training while on the road and while traveling. And I know a lot of us, even as club players, we travel to tournaments, whether that's within the state, out of state, maybe even out of the country. And it's really important to know exactly how to approach the, you know, these tournaments and competitions when you're traveling, and to know what types of training you can do while on the road, and how to just generally prepare yourself and recover so that you can play your best while competing. And so today I brought on Johnny Frazier, a great guy who I met actually this past July at the World Tennis Fitness Conference in Atlanta, courtesy of Mark Kovacs and the International Tennis Performance Association. And I've watched him give presentations over the past couple of years at that conference on tennis fitness. And I'm really happy to bring Johnny on. We had a fantastic talk about tennis fitness and training on the road, and I really think you'll enjoy this episode and learn a lot from it. So without further ado, here is my interview with Johnny Frazier. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Tennis Files Podcast, and it's really an honor to have Johnny Frazier on the Tennis Files Podcast today. And I met Johnny finally in person at the recent ITPA conference this past summer, which is the International Tennis Performance Association. And he's a really great guy, and I've previously seen articles that he's written on the ITPA website and in other realms of the tennis, writing world. And he does a lot of great work, and to introduce him, a bit of his background, Johnny has worked in tennis strength and conditioning, which is one of my favorite areas of tennis, for over 10 years now. And Johnny is the head of strength and conditioning science, the head of strength and conditioning at Claudio Pistolesi Enterprise. He's also the assistant director of fitness at the Tennis Congress. And Johnny also currently runs a business and website called Science and Tennis. And Johnny also acts as an associate lecturer at Sheffield Hallam University, and he is an MTPS for the International Tennis Performance Association. So he's been certified as an MTPS, I should say, which is the highest level of certification. So that tells you right there that Johnny has a great amount of information and knowledge that he's going to share with us today in the realm of tennis strength and conditioning specifically with respect to traveling on the road. So, Johnny, I really appreciate you coming on to the podcast today and happy to have you on.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for asking me, and I really appreciate your time. And so many great people have been on your podcast, and I'm just honored to be a part of it. And thank you so much. And I think just before I kind of, you know, we begin going through the discussion about working with players on the road and how that transfer across to working with players within clubs, I think I just want to thank a lot of people that have helped me in the past. People like, obviously, you mentioned Claudio Pistolesi, Mike James, Jason Torpy, Dave Murray, great tennis coaches who I've been lucky to work with, and then Howard Green, Dom King, who's been on your podcast, BJ from the Tennis Congress, Dean Hollingsworth, and just so many great people that I've met in my journey. So I like to think I'm more a selective thief rather than anything else. So I'm sure a lot of these people that listen, if they do listen, will be thinking I've stolen their ideas, but it's only because they're good ideas.
Yeah, no, thank you so much, Johnny. And like you mentioned, there are a lot of great names that you talked about, and many of whom I've had on my podcast, Dom, Dean, Mark Kovacs, who I think was episode 33. It's just a pleasure to have you on. And like you said, I'm really excited to talk about this subject today because, a ton of us, obviously, even club players, we travel to tournaments, USTA leagues, we'll travel sometimes out of state, even out of the country sometimes. So, really, really fantastic to talk about this subject today. But I want to also get a sense of how you got to where you are today, Johnny. So, how did you get your start in the tennis world?
Yeah, so I guess my start in the tennis world was very much like many people that work in tennis. So I played as a junior. I played for my county, which was Norfolk in the UK. And then when I was in my teenage years, I had a growth-related injury. So that stopped me playing for a period of time. And really, that's the first thing that got me interested in this area of physical training and sports science. And I was at a stage where I was choosing what I was going to do with regards to further education, looking at universities, and that led me to being really interested in sports science. And then I was really lucky to reach out to so many great people. And like you said, I did my undergraduate, I did my postgraduate at Sheffield Hallam, where I'm now an associate lecturer as well. And I guess the big development was Mark Kovacs, who you mentioned, who is one of the leaders, if not the leader, in tennis sports science. And I reached out to him, and at the time the ITPA was beginning to grow, and Mark invited me across to Atlanta. And I guess my journey really increased in speed after going across to see Mark sort of in the, 2013. So that really helped me develop and grow as an S&C coach. And that's really what's got my passion. Obviously, I've been working in it for 10 years or so, but the last 5 years has been great, and the ITP have certainly been a part of that.
Yeah, for sure, Johnny. And if I may ask, I'm just kind of curious, you mentioned an injury that kind of set you on the path to this niche within tennis. What injury was that?
So I had medial epicondylitis, which is a golfer's elbow. So so I was hyperextending a lot when I was playing my forehand, and that led to a lot of stress on the elbow, and it became inflamed. And I did the thing that I tell all the junior players that I work with now, not to play through pain, make sure they speak to the coach, make sure they speak to the trainer, speak to their parents. And I just played through it simply because I thought I could. And that wasn't a good idea. So I had to stop playing for a period of time. I couldn't even really hold a pen and write at one point. So it wasn't a good idea to do that.
Yeah, well, I mean, now you're filled with so much knowledge, and yeah, I'm sure you probably wouldn't make that mistake again because it's such a painful thing to play through. But I mean, sometimes people just want to get through it and keep playing, but I got to think of the long term. But yeah, Johnny, and what in particular, do you enjoy about tennis strength and conditioning that gets you so passionate about it?
So I think, first of all, seeing the benefits that physical training can have on the game. So with regards to improving performance, making the individual more robust, and using the term kind of bulletproof, so they can play the sport more and more that they love and that they enjoy doing. Because ultimately no tennis player wants to be injured because they can't play the game that they love and be on court. And also think the uniqueness of it, particularly working with professional players, how there's so many variables to take into account when you're working with the player. For example, the tournament scheduling, how playing a tournament can actually massively affect the training that you do in that week, from having maybe easy two set wins to long three set matches. And what do you do after the match? What do you do within the physical training during the tournament weeks? And I think that's what tennis really brings. It does bring that unique element. It isn't a sport where you know where you're playing each week at what particular time. There's so many factors that can affect it. And I think that's what I really do enjoy about the tennis fitness niche.
Yeah, it definitely is so incredibly important. And, I've, like I said, I've enjoyed reading about what you have learned yourself from all the great people in the tennis world and tennis fitness and strength and conditioning. And you also had a great presentation at the ITP conference this past summer. So like I said, really excited to talk strength and conditioning with you. But before we do that, what are three things that most of the world doesn't know about Johnny Fraser?
Oh, well, that's a good question. So I guess a lot of my friends will know it back in the UK here, but I'm actually a massive soccer fan. I support a team called Norwich City. So that's one of my big passions alongside tennis and the sports science and physical training that goes along with it. So that's a big thing for me. What else?
And to give you, I guess, more time, perhaps. But the soccer team you mentioned, is that in the Premier League, or which league is that one in?
We fluctuate from the Premier League to the Championship. So
gotcha.
So yeah, one day we'll rule the Premier League, I'm sure. But I've broken one bone ever in my body, and that was my big toe, and that was one day before London Marathon. So I was meant to run London Marathon, and that was the only time I broke a bone. So that was very frustrating, training all winter, and particularly through the snow and the ice and the freezing cold weather, and then dropping a 20-kilogram weight on my toe, which wasn't really very smart. So that's something that I'm sure people didn't know about me. And also that emphasizes the importance of safety and always concentrating when you're in the weights room, definitely. Something, again, that I always talk to my athletes about. And then probably the last thing is, I guess if we come back to tennis, one of my favorite tennis players for sure is the Australian Leighton Hewitt. And I just loved him when I was growing up, based on, again, on his physical presence on the court and his heart. And I love using the image of him with his knees on the grass, really trying to emphasize the importance of lunging and getting low to the ball. So I guess that's another thing people don't know about me.
Awesome. Great tidbits there, Johnny. And yeah, I mean, speaking of this this subject, you know, I had to take a couple weeks break because I got sick overseas, and then I came back to playing tennis after not much physical activity, and I could really feel the huge difference. You know, my movement was off, I felt weak. And I mean, that's, you know, that's part of why this area is so important for tennis players to focus on. You know, it's not always just technique, because even if you have great technique, but you have repetitive movements, I mean, you could still get injured if you're not fit. But in any case, you know, you're a specialist, from what I understand, Johnny, in sports science. So could you kind of talk a bit about what exactly sports science is and how it's evolved over the years in tennis?
Yeah, so first of all, a kind of sports science really looks at how sport and exercise improves health, well-being, and performance with the particular athletes or the general population that you're working with. And in sports science, there are a range of disciplines. So the disciplines are biomechanics, physiology, psychology, nutrition, performance analysis, such as looking at, you'll see more and more of this in tennis, looking at court positions, number of unforced errors, number of balls on after four shots, after eight shots, and so on, strength and conditioning, and performance lifestyle. So sports science really is this idea of a holistic approach to developing athletes, but also providing health and well-being for people. And my background was actually in physiology. So I did my master's in physiology. And I think really how the physiology is important is because the physiology ultimately influences the adaptations in the body. So really what we're looking for within strength and conditioning is we're looking at adaptations, and we need to work out the best way for those adaptations. And that's through the number of sets, the number of reps, the intensity, the rest periods we give to our athletes. So that's really kind of my background in sports science. But as you're kind of aware, that the disciplines that I mentioned, they all work holistically, and they should all be integrated when you're working with athletes. So for example, a background, an understanding of biomechanics is important because we need to understand the joint angles with regards to technique within tennis, for example. Psychology is essential. These mental skills that we use with our players to help them form routines, help them concentrate, etc. They're essential in tennis. And the other area as well is actually performance lifestyle. So it's how athletes manage their bodies within within the context of their lives. So, for example, some athletes may be studying. For I saw you you went to college and you were playing tennis, and at that stage it was I assume and guessing you have to manage your education with your tennis and all the other factors that go with life. So really, that's what sports science is, and how it's evolved, particularly since I graduated over 10 years ago now. Seems like a long time ago, but seems only like yesterday. Is really how technology is beginning to influence sport, and I'd say tennis is a long way behind with regards to technology. So if we come back to soccer. GPS is used massively in soccer, and how they look at the number of accelerations, the number of decelerations, the distance players cover, the volume that they produce in training during a match period. So I think that's how, for sure, sports science is developing with this technology. And one of the areas that I'm really interested in is monitoring training load. So how hard are players working, and can we use this this objective measures and subjective measures, so how the athlete feels, and help guide their training more and more. But without doubt, in tennis over the next 2-3 years, I can really see technology catching up and kicking on and really helping players more and more.
For sure, Johnny. Really interesting stuff. And that reminded me of the we had a tech portion at the ITPA session, and it was really interesting to see the developments and presentations from some of the representatives of companies and other sports science experts on what technologies are being used to track all these parameters. And another thought too, from what you were saying, is especially when I was in a phase where I was trying to grow as much muscle as possible, when you talked about the physiology and the sets and reps, that's something that I'm always really interested in trying to find, you know, what combination produces, you know, what sort of results. And so really, you know, really cool, area to study and know about, because a lot of people are kind of confused about what exactly we sets, reps and rests that we need to produce optimal results. So definitely looking forward to talk to you about that too. But so as far as training on the road, what have you seen are some of the biggest challenges that players face when they are traveling on the road and needing or should be training?
Yeah, I think without doubt, training and practicing on the road is incredibly challenging. First of all, based on the changing environments that you're always in. So obviously flying to different parts of the world, or if you're traveling a long distance in the car to play events. So I think the changing environment is always the biggest challenge for players. And if we think about players who are traveling all over the world, the alterations in the circadian rhythm, so the body's natural clock. And I think that is one of the first things that I've noticed working with players is a really important thing to try and manage. I mean, it's very hard because everyone's individual and everyone's different, but, you know, trying to make sure players have good practice on the plane, trying to find ways in which they can sleep, for example, just choosing the right seat to sit in, which helps them sleep. For example, like the aisle seat, the window seat, and just trying to get comfortable on the plane and little things that they can do to incorporate before they travel. So maybe trying to get to bed a little bit earlier, so they're beginning to try and get into the time zone, taking small naps when they get there, but obviously not sleeping back in their previous time zone. So that's the first big challenge that I find with players. And obviously the change in temperature, the humidity, the court surface, all these factors have to be taken into account, and that's where the monitoring, the training and the load is really important. And then also the facilities that you have. So if you're training at your base or at your home club, for example, You know what facilities you have, so you are likely to have a gym, and you know what dumbbells, barbells, equipment you have in there. And often we're playing at clubs where, or venues where we're having to train on court. We actually don't have any access to gyms, or we have your standard hotel gym where you have maybe a treadmill, a bike, a few dumbbells, a medicine ball, and a bench, basically. So that's certainly some of the challenges that I faced when traveling on the road, alongside obviously the challenges with nutrition and trying to eat the right things and make sure the player's healthy and ready to play and compete.
There's some wonderful tips, Johnny. And, you know, as far as knowing like what's around you, I sometimes have a bad habit of not researching fully enough, you know, where I'm going to be at and what's around. So, I mean, how much research do you usually, you or your team, perform, you know, when trying to figure out like what resources there are in the area where you're going?
Yeah, I think that's an awesome comment. The planning, the preparation is key. So, for example, if you're playing for your club and you're traveling 2 or 3 hours away, the first thing would be, like I do with the players, is obviously find out the surface, find out the particular tennis balls that are being used. I think that's really important from a coaching perspective. Also, scouting around, what facilities are there? So go on Google Maps. Is there a park next to the tennis club, for example? So one of the things that I've been doing with my players is, if we don't have a facility, we can train in the park next door. So scouting what facilities are around, making use of lots of gym passes when we can, and just really researching the facility. Do they have a gym there? And trying to scout on again Google, trying to get some images of the facility that we're working in. And often, you know, recently when I was in Canada, we were really lucky. We had some great facilities to train and practice in. But then in other cases, like I said, we were training in parks or you know, cooling down in the clubhouse, for example. So it is really important to research and find out what's around. And that also takes into account transportation with players, seeing how long it takes to get from the hotel, the Airbnb to the venue, so we can warm up, we can prepare properly. And also looking around what restaurants there are. And what I found is, and I think this is human nature as well, is that trying to form a routine as quickly as you can when you're in the new environment is important. So if you like a restaurant and you feel that restaurant, the food is good, and you feel you're not going to get sick and it prepares you and it helps you recover, I think we stick with that and we just get into that good routine like we would have at home.
So Johnny, great stuff there. And you know, some club players might think that they don't have to really worry about traveling on the road and because they're club players and, you know, maybe only pros have to worry about these kinds of things. But can you talk to us about, you know, the similarities or the differences between concerns that pros versus club players would have when thinking about traveling and training on the road?
Yeah, so I think that's a great question. And there certainly are similarities, and I think with regards to club players, often you know that they're working all day, we're working all day, and then we quickly go to the club to prepare for our match. And with regards to the pro players, particularly when we've got match day, we go down to the club. We could be down there for a long period of time, waiting for the previous match to finish. So we warm up many times and we're there all day and we're waiting and then we play our match. So I think really the similarities are, you know, club players, professional players, we always have to have that awareness that things can change. And also we need to make sure that we warm up properly before the matches, and we make sure we give ourselves enough time to do that. And also I think with regards to similarities as well, very often if you're playing a club match and you travel to a club you're not too sure about, again, you're going to have limited equipment. So if you at your club, you get down 30 minutes early and you warm up on the bike and you spend some time in the gym, and then you realize that the club that you're playing at doesn't have that option, that access to a gym, or based on particular rules and regulations, you can't do that. you have to be adaptable, and you have to be prepared on any instance in ways in which to warm up. So you need that that ability to have that variety and contingencies as you need. I think obviously the difference is with professionals is that you know, we solely focus on the tennis, that they're tennis athletes, they're full-time professionals, so we can really try and schedule the day more effectively and schedule their training more effectively, rather than like I said, with club players, we're maybe in work sort of for long periods of time. But I think there are certainly similarities and differences, and this is really what I really feel is that regardless of whether you're a club player or you're a professional player, you can prepare and you can plan and you can be ready in the same way.
Right. And I think being that most of the people listening to the podcast are those that really want to improve their game. I mean, these are perhaps you might think of them as little things, but they make a huge difference for sure. So that's great stuff there, Johnny. And can you give us some recent examples of players that you've been training, that you've traveled with to tournaments, and what tournaments you've been going to? Because I know before we started the episode, you were kind of talking about that you've had some recent travels. So if you could kind of talk about that.
Yeah, sure. So I'm really in a lucky and privileged position where you mentioned Claudio at the start of the podcast, and after the over the last 4-5 years, I've got to know Claudio Pistolesi, who is an amazing coach, an amazing person, and I've been supporting him and his players alongside another coach, Mike James, and we've created this idea of this team, this creating a team for players. And I know players have teams who support them, but this team is where we can provide them support on the road based on their particular needs. So obviously I'm a physical trainer, and I spend time with these players. So I've had a really good year working with a player called Francesco Ferrari, and we've all been supporting him at various tournaments, and he's been doing great in singles and doubles, and I've spent time in Bulgaria, Israel, the US and Canada, and I've also had experiences working with club players as well this year, which has been great in Ireland. So that was really great, trying to incorporate, like you just said, about what professionals do and what club players do can be very similar. And it just comes down to planning and preparation and the little things, doing the little things right.
Great stuff. And speaking of doing the little things right, what are some of the biggest mistakes that you've seen that that club players or really any other players make when traveling?
Yeah, so I think preparation is the key, without a doubt. Regardless of whether you're a club player or you're a professional, you need to be prepared. So what I mean by that is, you know, you need to make sure you have your foam roller, you have your mini band, you have your resistance band in the bag, so you can warm up effectively. You can then cool down effectively as well. You can go through your stretching routines. So I think that is really what club players need to be doing. And I think that's often an area that, you know, we get down to the court, we warm up is literally opening the can of balls, going straight back to the baseline, but we need to give ourselves time and be prepared to warm up. And also just being inventive in the workouts. So often we don't have any space. So using car parks, using the balcony, using the corridor to warm up effectively are all things that we can do. And I think that's an area that really requires focus. So that's kind of, yeah, that'd be kind of the areas that I would suggest.
Great. Awesome stuff, Johnny. And so speaking of traveling and training, what are some essential pieces of equipment, or it can even be, I mean, food or other items or snacks that you would suggest players who are traveling to play a match should ideally bring with them in their bag?
So certainly, like I mentioned, a foam roller, so just a half foam roller. You can then work on obviously the trigger points in your body, and always think this is an important thing in the warm-up and the cool down, making sure we work through our, what I would say, our hot spots. So everyone will have hot spots on their body. It might be your calves, it might be your hips, your upper back. So that's the first thing I'd always suggest for players to have in their bags, alongside a mini band, so one of the smaller resistance bands. So we can do our prehab work, for example, with our shoulders, like a retraction exercise where we're working on setting our shoulder blades and squeezing them back, alongside monster walk. So we're activating our glutes and working on glute stability and strength. And then your standard resistance band. So, I mean, that comes across so many levels of resistance bands. So we can use that in our warm-up to activate our shoulders. We can use that to activate our trunk, our core. But then also when we're on the road, resistance bands are our key kind of ingredient for our strength training. So having a range of resistance bands that will help develop strength alongside resistance bands that you can use to warm up. And also a hockey ball for sure. So again, we talk about the trigger points and releasing those areas so we can work on our mobility within those particular sections of our body. And the hockey ball can just get into those kind of tighter areas, such as around the shoulder blades and in those deeper points in the hips that we really need to work on. So without doubt, those four things. And then if we think about speed and movement, just having a handful of cones can really help out. So you don't need much, but you certainly need something.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
Awesome. Thanks for that, Johnny. And so a couple, I guess, nitpicky questions, but you did mention with the bands to get a range. So, I mean, I guess that sort of answers my question, but I was going to ask you, like, what color band should we use for what situation? For what exercises and intensities?
Sure. Yeah. So ultimately, when we're warming up, I think one of the, I'm kind of going to go into the theory and then kind of give you an answer with it. When we're warming up, I think people see players doing YTWs and rows with the resistance band. And this is not really a strength exercise. This is actually an activation exercise. So we want to be using some of the lighter bands, such as the yellow band, that will allow us to warm up with regards to that. And then as we go through the bands, kind of the stronger ones, if we're working more on the strength element, are going to be maybe the black bands, just because there's more resistance going through them. So it's important that we really understand the context of the exercise and the rationale why we're using that band. And then in between, we have the red and the green bands that are kind of in the middle there. So if you're pretty strong, you can use maybe one of the green bands for the warm-up exercise. And if maybe you need to develop that strength a little bit more, you might use a red or green one for the strength exercises.
Got it. Thanks for that, Johnny. And then you mentioned the hockey ball, and to be honest, I had to just Google that now. But could you kind of describe the hockey ball and what exactly how that's used?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So a hockey ball or like a lacrosse ball, something that is a little bit harder than a foam roller, and that can really get deeper into the tissue. So one of the key things that I work on is mobility. So and again, regardless if you're a club player or a professional player, if we think about science, work equals force times distance. So, for example, let's say every time you work, you hit a forehand, and to create that energy, for that to work, you need force and distance. So you've got two options, two variables there. You either create more force, or you have good distance within the joint to help create that work. So the hockey ball, really, we can work nice and deep in the joint, and we can increase the mobility around that joint. And work through those trigger points. Basically, I mean, you could term it as the knots. And really, you want to hold it on those tight spots for 20, 30 seconds. You might want to move the joint into different positions to really get a feel of that. And then hopefully that will relax and release that that fascia that surrounds the tissue, and then we can go into our mobility work and really really work on increasing that distance around maybe a tight joint, for example. I think the analogy, I had a really good analogy from Ali Galem, who runs Athletic 1080. And if we think about mobility and stability, so stability is obviously the how stable the joint is. And if we work on stability and it lacks mobility and it's tight, we're basically screwing a nail into a piece of wood and then it kind of splits. So that's really why, for me, working on that mobility is important if someone's tight there. And that's how the hockey ball and the foam roller are key.
Thanks, Johnny. That's a fantastic explanation of those concepts. And so, you know, one other question too, when you're going on the road and let's say you have, you know, matches throughout the week, hopefully more than one, you know, assuming you win, what level of intensity should we be training with? You know, I mean, should we be going super light, medium, very heavy? If you could kind of talk about that, that would be great.
Yeah, sure. I think this is where it comes back to the question about what I love working in tennis. And ultimately, the most common answer I hear in sports science is it really depends. So like you said, hopefully, you know, the player is going through the tournament and, you know, they get through the first, second round into the quarters, semis, and then final. But for example, let's say the player loses first round on the Monday, and we have 6 days to train before the next tournament. So during the early part of the week there, the Tuesday and the Wednesday, that's when we can really work on the strength areas, and the volume's going to be higher. So what I mean by that is the number of rep sets that we're going to do is going to be higher, and the intensity is going to be higher in the gym. And then as we come up to match day, so say we train in the gym on the Tuesday, we train in the gym on the Thursday, and the player is going to be playing on the Monday, we'll begin to drop the intensity. We'll still keep kind of the speed and movement intensity high on the court. And with regards to maybe the speed and agility drills, but in the weights room, we'll drop the volume and the intensity. And I think that is important for club players as well to be aware of, is that I think, first of all, having a good program, a good structured program is important. But if your match day is, say, for example, a Saturday, during the week, you may have a schedule where you play tennis three times a week, for example. So you may play on the Tuesday, Thursday and Friday. And then we can structure our program around that, where Monday, for example, we work in the gym on our strength. Wednesday, we work in the gym on our strength. We take into account the volume, the intensity, and then hopefully we're recovered and ready to play on the Saturday. And then on the other couple of days, we're going to be working on our tennis movement, our tennis specific movement, our speed and agility. And I'd always recommend, again, regardless of the level that you play, having this understanding of prehab training. So making sure that we're working on those common areas that are tight, and also strengthening the areas that maybe lack stability. But ultimately, as we come to the match, we're going to drop the volume, drop the intensity. Where on the flip side, say the player gets to the final, they're playing on the Saturday, and then they're playing the next tournament on the Monday. The intensity would be very moderate, and the volume would be moderate. And I think as well, one of the key things to mention is that when we are working with players on the road, and also again, this relates to club players when you're away, for example, on holiday or on business, we want to try and maintain the strength gains that we've had. So it is still important that we do perform strength and conditioning training, and we do that either in the gym or using the resistance bands, or we do incorporate some speed and movement work into our warm-up. So that's kind of how I would vary the intensity based on the particular demands of the tournament and the scheduling.
Got it. Thanks so much for that, Johnny. And so when you talk about, like, say, if we had the 6 days in between matches and we're working on strength in the beginning of that week and then we taper down, for those strength days, I'm wondering if you have some sort of standard set and rep type scheme that you use for most players, or does it just fluctuate depending on the player?
Yeah, so I think first of all, it fluctuates certainly on the players, but also the demand that you're working on. So if we take into account the different areas that we want to work on, so muscular endurance would be one potential area, hypertrophy, so increasing cross-sectional area that will allow increases in force, maybe another area. And then we go towards rate of force development and then maximum strength. So if we think about tennis players, ultimately we certainly need a level of cross-sectional area within the muscle to help generate force, but we don't really want that much. We really want to be working towards that more maximal strength. But before we can do that, we need this certain level of hypertrophy. So generally for hypertrophy, for cross-sectional area size, we're thinking 3 to 6 sets, reps anywhere from 6 to 12 with a load of 65 to 85%, for example. But with tennis players, like I said, we really want to be trying to work more towards that higher load. So we're really trying to activate the nervous system and limit to a certain extent cross-sectional area. So we're going to be working more on sets 2 to 6, lower reps, so less than 6, and a load of around 85%. But again, it just depends on the demands and the needs of the player. So if we feel a player does need to get a little bit bigger and stronger, without doubt we need to plan some hypertrophy training in there. And we may do it in a non-linear fashion. So what I mean by that is that 1 week we may focus on hypertrophy, then we may change the reps and sets and go more towards max strength. And we just adapt them accordingly. But I would say for any player out there, a really good starting point is towards muscular endurance. So 2 to 3 sets of 12 reps, and then gradually build that up based on kind of the physical demands of the athlete.
Great stuff, Johnny. Now, I've heard of this concept of undulating periodization, which I guess is kind of what you just mentioned as far as focusing on different, aspects of like hypertrophy and strength and muscle endurance, switching them each workout perhaps. But if someone were to do that and just say, all right, you know what, I'm going to work on each one evenly, would that be a good approach, or would that be something where, no, you need to figure out, you know, what traits do I actually need and then work on those like in different levels?
Certainly. I think the second thing that you suggested, I think undulating periodization works within tennis more towards when you're working day in, day out with a player, because you begin to know them, you begin to understand them, you really know what they want to work on. But what I would say is, certainly if you're new to strength and conditioning, is that you really need to have a good solid all-round program where it's kept simple. So for example, if you're just training twice a week in the gym, which will be enough for overload, two sessions a week is just about enough. Ideally we want to be hitting 3, but again, that just depends on the schedule of people and the demands which are placed upon them. I would certainly say have a set program where, if you are, you know, work on muscular endurance, work on hypertrophy, work on max strength. Because if you haven't done much strength training before, you will get strong very quickly without really working at higher loads, simply because your neuromuscular system will adapt, and that can only help you on court.
Awesome stuff, Johnny. And can you give us like a sample workout that maybe you've recently had one of your players go through while training on the road?
Yeah, sure. So thinking to when we've been training in the park and we've really had limited equipment. I think one of the programs that we worked through is this, is starting off with this explosive work. So we use the explosive work first, because again, that's really fatiguing on the body. So, for example, we would do 3 lots of 6 reps, some single leg box squats, and then we go into some body weight squat jumps. So we're really working on that explosive element to the game, and then some lateral bounds, which is kind of like the ice skaters, where you're you're jumping side to side, single leg. So we're trying to incorporate lateral movement as well. And also ankle stability, because sprained ankles are a very common injury in tennis. And then after that, we'll go on to our band work. So I'm a big believer in keeping things simple. So for example, we'll squat in there. So three lots of 12 squats. So I know that's working more towards muscular endurance, but that's just based on the fact of the equipment that we had with regards to the bands. And some things we do is to challenge the athlete is that we change the tempo, the speed of the exercise. So we go slower down. So we take 4 or 5 seconds going down, and then we come up nice and quick because we have more time and attention. So so squatting would be one exercise that we've done. We then go into a lunge pattern. So we're doing the fundamental squatting, lunging. And then we'll go into some form of hinge exercise. So that would be a deadlift with a resistance band. So again, you set the band up, you perform it exactly like you would with the deadlift, just using that resistance. We'd then do some horizontal pull exercises. So that would be, for example, a banded row. So we do 3 lots of 12 again of that. And then a vertical pull. So that might be a band pull down. And then we go through some core exercises. So for example, like a pull-off press, the one where we're with the band and we're pushing the band out, and then we're bringing it back in to work on anti-rotation, and then some form of real kind of stability exercise on the floor, such as shoulder taps or planks, based ultimately on time. So that's the sort of program that we do on the road using the bands. And then we can just flip that, switch that, and do exactly the same thing in the gym, just with our barbells and our dumbbells. We just have more free rein, really.
Awesome stuff, John. Appreciate that. And also, I know you touched upon this in the beginning, but any particular recovery tips that you have for players, after they play matches?
Yeah, I think recovery is really an area that I really enjoy reading about. And it's another area that's developing really quickly. And I think, first of all, we have to do the basics well. So it's really easy to say, but we need to sleep and rest and try and get however many hours our body actually needs. And that comes down to this idea of sleep hygiene, which I'm really, again, interested in. So, for example, reducing light off the phones and off the iPads when we're in bed, and trying to find a comfortable environment to sleep in, particularly when we're traveling, you know, when we're away on business or when we are a traveling tennis player, you know, just trying to get comfortable in that bed that you're sleeping. So that's the first thing. Sleep is key. You really need sleep for not only the physical side to recover, but also the mental side as well. So it's really, really important. And then the basics of being well hydrated and fueling with food and recovering quickly. And then, again, I keep talking more and more about the foam roller and working on those tight points with the foam roller and the hockey ball, and making sure we're doing our mobility work. So the mobility and flexibility work is important because it helps maintain this good movement, which obviously is going to help reduce the risk of injury over time. I think the link between flexibility and mobility and reducing injury is tenuous. I'm sure it happens, but if we think about it from a fact of it's just helping maintain good movement around the joint, which will help reduce the risk of injury.
Great. Appreciate that, Johnny. And so, speaking of tennis fitness, what's one thing about this particular niche, tennis fitness, that you've maybe changed your philosophy about over the years? Because we know the game evolves, and you obviously, with all the studying that you have done in this area, maybe there's something that you previously thought was a correct way to go about something, but then it just changed, you know, your perspective changed. So is there anything that you can think of in particular that you've changed your philosophy on about tennis fitness?
Yeah, I love this question. So really how I view it is when I finished university and I came out and I started training players, it was all about them as athletes within the gym, for example, or or working on movement. However, the philosophy that I've massively changed is that we need to treat the players as tennis players. They're tennis players. That's the main thing that they're doing. And we need to just be smart. We need to be safe. We need to be effective in our training. But that's how we need to view them. They're not Olympic lifters. They're not power lifters. They're not bodybuilders. We need to treat them individually as tennis players. And the physical training is a tool to help reduce the risk of injury, improve their performance, and also keep them healthy. And that's kind of where I've changed from thinking as a trainer, I have to do this exercise or I have to do that exercise. It's a case of, okay, these guys are tennis players. These are the exercises that I believe work. These are the exercises that reduce the risk of injury in the gym or on the court. And that's what I'm going to do.
Love it. Great stuff, Johnny. And so as I mentioned in the beginning, when introducing you, you do have a company called Science and Tennis. And can you tell us a little bit about your company and also what it aims to achieve?
Yeah, so Science and Tennis is my company here in Sheffield where we support players in the local area. And really what it is it's linked to how sports science can help anyone, regardless of age, regardless of level, and using this idea of this holistic sports science approach to help develop people not only physically and through fitness and exercise, but also on the tennis court. So we work with particularly youth athletes, an area that I'm really interested in working with, and we provide young athletes physical training programs that they can use to incorporate with their tennis. So that's what Science and Tennis is about. It's about that anyone, regardless of age or level, can access good quality strength and conditioning support. And it will help them not only help their health, but also help them on the tennis court.
Wonderful, Johnny. And that the website for that is scienceandtennis.com. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's right.
Wonderful, wonderful. And Johnny, I know you're a very learned man, obviously, especially in this field. So, what three books would you gift to a tennis player to help them improve their tennis game? And it doesn't have to all three books. They don't all have to be in tennis fitness, but any three books that you think would help tennis players?
Yeah, wow, that's a great question from someone that just tends to read journals and textbooks. So let me have a little think. Okay, so certainly Claudio gave me this book over the summer, and my parents had this book, and I never read it, and I wish I did. It's called The Inner Game of Tennis. I'm sure you've read that before, and I can't believe it's taken me 20 years to read it. So that would be one book I'd give to a player, and what it really talks about is it talks about the mental side of tennis. It talks about the different selves that you have on the tennis court. And ultimately, not to overthink and trust yourself and trust your body on the tennis court. So that's certainly one book I would give to a player. I'd obviously have to give one of Mark Kovac's books, just for the physical training, because Mark's created so many good resources, and I think enhancing the on-court performance book from. Sort of 10 years ago, I think that would certainly be a book that I would give to a player, because it's a book that I still refer back to. And then probably a book called Relentless, which is written by Tim Grover, I believe his name is. He was Michael Jordan's trainer, and it just basically talks really about never give up, always believe in yourself, and really what you need to do to come to the top of whatever sport or whatever profession you want to be in. So there are three hopefully varied books that I would give to a tennis player.
Wonderful stuff. Yeah, like you mentioned, I have read The Inner Game of Tennis, and that's a fantastic book. And I also have Complete Conditioning for Tennis, the second edition, written by Dr. Mark Kovacs, and I think Paul Rotert as well. So those are definitely fantastic books. And also, just curious, Johnny, do you have any sorts of routines, in the morning or at night, or anything, that helps you throughout your day?
Yeah, so I think it's really based on my situation. For example, if I'm away with the player, one of the first things I will do when we're driving to, say, the Airbnb or the hotel is to scout the area to see if there's anywhere where I can basically run, because I am a secret runner and I love running. And so if I'm away with the player, I would wake up and try and take a 20-30 minute run to help get my thoughts together, get some fresh air into the lungs. And one of the other things that I didn't mention with regards to recovery is also being mindful of the environment you're in. So taking in the small things in life that you see. So, you know, the sun, the plants. So that's something that I would certainly do when I'm away with the player. I'd wake up, I'd take a run straight out of bed, and then I'd shower and just have breakfast. And that would be my routine when I'm away. When I'm back here, back home, and for example, I'm teaching at the university, it would be a little bit of a switch where I would just wake up, have my breakfast, take in the news and the sport, and have a quick shower, and then try and walk to work. Because again, I really think walking in the fresh air or being out in the fresh air is so good for the body. So I'd walk maybe half an hour to work, to the university. And again, think about the day ahead and think about things that I want to do to make my day the most productive.
Fantastic tips, Johnny. Appreciate that a lot. And so, I mean, you've obviously given us such great information today and really do appreciate it. Like I said, I really highly respect, you know, all the work that you do for the tennis community. And I want to ask you where the audience can follow you either online or in person.
Yeah, sure. So on Twitter, if you go to at Science and Tennis, that's my Twitter feed. And then on Facebook, the same thing, at Science and Tennis. And obviously through Claudio Pistolesi Enterprise. So there are places there to find out more, I guess, about me. And if you want to contact me, please do. And I'd be happy to answer some questions and help out whoever would like it.
Wonderful. Appreciate that, Johnny. So before I let you go, and again, I appreciate your time today, what is one key tip that you can give us to help us improve our tennis games?
Okay, yeah. So without doubt, it is being prepared and planning. So regardless of how much you play, whether you are a club player, whether you're a professional player, it's always being prepared. It's always making sure that we go through the small things and we do them well that will help you. So making sure we do a good warm-up, making sure we do our prehab, making sure we do our cool down. So be prepared, be planned, and ultimately give yourself time.
Awesome, Johnny. Well, thanks again so much for coming on to the podcast. I really, like I said, do appreciate your time and sharing your expertise with us. And, you know, thanks for everything that you do for everybody and all the people you train. I'm sure they're all very grateful for your help and expertise. So really appreciate it. And I'm looking forward to seeing you at the very least at the next ITPA conference or hopefully earlier. But thanks so much and wish you all the best.
For sure. Thank you so much for having me on. It's been an absolute pleasure. And thanks for all you do as well. And like I said, I owe a lot of thanks to many people. So if I haven't mentioned you, then you all know who you are. But thanks again and great work on the Tennis Files. You do an awesome job.
Thanks, Johnny. Very humble. I appreciate the kind words. Thanks.
No, pleasure. Take care. Thank you.
You too. All right. I really hope you enjoyed this episode of the Tennis Files podcast with Johnny Frazier. And again, thanks so much to Johnny for coming on to the podcast today. I really enjoy talking about tennis fitness and especially with great people like Johnny. So thanks again. And I really appreciate you all for tuning in to this episode. And it would also be awesome if you could submit a review for the Tennis Files podcast, whether that's on iTunes or the podcast app of your choice that you use to listen to the show. And that would really help bring more visibility to the podcast and bump it up higher in the rankings. At least that's what I hear, so that it could be broadcasted to more people and be seen by more people and listened to. So I really would appreciate that. And If you'd like to check out any of the links mentioned on this episode of the podcast, you can go to tennisfiles.com/69. And as I often like to do at the end of the show, I'd like to leave you with a quote. And this quote is by Arthur Ashe. I think that this might be the first tennis player quote I've ever included on the show, which might seem odd, but there you go. And this quote is one that I really resonate with. And Arthur said, "One important key to success is self-confidence. An important key to self-confidence is preparation." And I resonate with that because if I'm not prepared, I do not feel self-confident, and you can guess what happens from there. So very important and fantastic quote. All right, as always, thank you so much for your support and for listening to the Tennis Files podcast. And I can't wait to bring you another episode next week for the show. And all the best. Keep improving your tennis game step by step, 1% per day. If you do that, then you're going to be on your way to reaching the next level in your tennis game. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you on the next episode of the Tennis Files podcast. Take care, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Tennis Files podcast. For more tips to help you improve your tennis game, visit tennisfiles.com.